Hierdie inset word aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.
Jy luister na die albumprogram Krag van die Bybel. En dit is lekker om saam met jou vandag weer in hierdie feestyd waarin ons nou gaan. En die groot fees wat ons herdenk, ja, saam met die wêreld, maar ook 'n manier om die evangelie in die wêreld te bring, nee, om nie opgeslurp te word deur die kommersiële kerstyd nie, maar werklik ook tyd te vind om rustig te wees en die woord van die Here te oordink. Die Bible Projects, wat die eerste deel van hierdie program is, gaan juist nou vandag ook kyk na die episode Jesus as the New Moses and Much More. Ons het hierdie program om juist rustig te kan dink, reflekteer, mediteer, wat jy dit ook al wil noem. Maar om tot stilte te kom, tot rust te kom, en werklik te kyk na die woord van die Here. En ons het die tema van die jaar is die Matteus Evangelie, en daarom gaan ons op die pad van Matteus om juist hieroor te dink. Jy is baie welkom om in te skakel by Kaapse Kansel 021-180-5744 en dan die eerste optie wat jy kry, die berading optie te neem en dan met 'n berader te gesels en saam te bid oor juist dit wat gebeur op die oomblik in jou lewe, die goed of die sleg, die swaar of die maklik. As jy die behoefte het om dit te deel na iemand wat opgelei is om te kan luister, doen dit gerus en skakel in elke dag op die weeksdae na Kaapse Kansel. En natuurlik, ons is steeds besig om dit te vier, dat Kaapse Kansel terug is op die lug en almal kan ons luister. Die meeste in die Wes-Kaap kan inskakel op AM 729. So, wanneer jy in jou kar is, as jy nou in jou kar is ook, skakel op AM 729 of skakel daai radio aan 729 en luister. En kom ons doen dit sommer nou, dan luister jy ook saam met my na AM 729. Daar gaan hy.
Ek kan die straf vir opsetlike oogkontak oortreding.
Ons het daar op 'n nuus ingeskakel, maar ons gaan eerder inskakel op nou om saam hierdie tyd te herdenk van Jesus se geboorte, God wat mens geword het. So anders as wat ons ooit kon dink. En mens word getref deur die manier waarop God sy verlossing bewerk. So dat mense dit nie eens herken het nie. Ook vandag, Here maak ons vry. Ons ontvang sy gees. Ons kan nie kyk na die wêreld rondom ons. En daarom is dit so belangrik om werklik te kan stilstand kom, te luister en die krag van die woord te ervaar. Wat deur die gees en deur mense wat deur wie die gees gewerk het, in 'n sekere tyd op 'n sekere wyse sy woord te kan gee. En nou kan ons dit ontvang. En vernuut word deur die werk van die gees en die woord wat saamgetuig oor die liefde van die Here, oor sy verlossingsplan. Bible Project se potgooi nou gaan dat jy is oor Jesus as the new Moses and much more. Voor Jesus se geboorte het die Israeliete hulle, of toe hy gebore is ook, hulle omstandighede onder die Romeine en hulle hoop wat hulle het uit die Hebreëse Bybel, die Ou Testament, hulle hoop op Godse verlossing. Hulle het dit alles verstaan deur die lens van Exodus, dat God dit weer doen, om hulle te verlos uit slavernij. En dit is waarom die evangelieskrywers Jezus se geboorte en die, sy werk op aarde juist vertel op 'n manier wat terugwys na die Exodus verhaal. Matteus by uitstek doen dit ook so, om die evangelie so te skryf. Jezus wat gebore word en dan in die konteks van 'n owerheid, 'n ander owerheid, die Romeine, en dan hoe hy moes vlug saam met sy ouers na Egipte. En dan kom hy terug, want die owerheid wat die babes dan doodmaak om die koms van Jezus te stop, die bose wat werk deur die owerheid om Jezus se koms te stop. En hierdie potgooi verken Tim en John dan die hoofthema's wat in Jezus se geboorte kom. Sy doop in die Jordaanrivier, sy versoekings in die wildernis, sy bediening in Galilea. Wonderlik diep en ryk is die woord. En jy kan dit nooit te veel lees, die selfde gedeeltes, oor en oor, en luister na wat die Here sê, en kry die een story wat dwars deur die woord gaan. Dankie dat jy ingeskakel is op ons program en op Kaapse Kansel. En neem met ons deel in hierdie groot fees wat ons nou kan deel op die mediumgolf liggolwe dat Jezus gebore is. Bly ingeskakel op die program en luister dan eers na Tim en John se potgooi.
Welcome to Bible Project Podcast. We are discussing the theme of the Exodus way. This is the way out of slavery, the way through the wilderness, and the way into the land of inheritance and blessing. It's the deliverance that ancient Israel experienced when God rescued them from Egypt. And it's what every new generation of Israel is called to experience, whether they're in the land or not. The biblical story is about how everyone, in fact, the entire cosmos, is stuck in slavery, but God provides a way out. Today we get to Jesus, and we see how the gospel authors portray Jesus as a new Moses, calling us out of our cosmic slavery. And this includes the importance of the baptism of Jesus through the waters.
All four gospels feature John the Baptist at the beginning as a way to introduce Jesus. Now here's John saying, let's name our sins and go through the Jordan River again. The Jordan River was super important in the Exodus storyline. It's the mirror image of the deliverance through the waters from Pharaoh.
We'll also look at the time of testing that Jesus has in the wilderness.
Jesus is led into the wilderness by the Spirit, where he was tested by the slanderer. Jesus responds by quoting from speeches of Moses, where Moses is recounting the wilderness journeys of the 40 years. So it's really clear.
We'll look at the ministry of Jesus going through the land, announcing the arrival of God's kingdom. He heals people of diseases and sets them free from cosmic tyrants. What Jesus is doing is referred to by the gospel authors as a rescue, often translated as salvation.
The Greek word used in all of those cases is the word sozo, to be saved. To talk about the healing of someone's body as salvation actually assumes a cosmic Exodus frame. Jesus is like a new Moses and Joshua, leading us into a new promised land, and the kingdom of God is here.
Today, Tim Mackey and I start to make the connections of how the Exodus way leads to Jesus. Thanks for joining us. Here we go. Hey, Tim.
Hello, John.
Hello.
Hey there.
We get to talk about the new Exodus as it relates to the life of Jesus.
Yes. So good.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful way to spend time.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. So what we're going to look at essentially is the way the birth narratives of Jesus, especially Matthew, are presenting Jesus as a Moses-like figure, a Moses plus.
Mm-hmm.
He's Moses and more in the birth narratives, and then also his journey in the wilderness is parallel to Israel's journey in the wilderness after the Exodus. And then he arrives at a mountaintop a couple times that are both set on analogy to the mountaintop moments that Israel experienced on their way out of Egypt and onto the Promised Land. And all these are really ripe moments to draw out the meaning and significance of Jesus' story. But you could say this way, what the Exodus narrative is about is what the story of Jesus is about.
Hmm.
A journey of bringing deliverance so that God can enthrone the poor and the needy and the oppressed and sit them on the thrones of princes. That's using the language of Psalm 113.
Okay.
So the Exodus story was like a palette. Like think of a painter
mm-hmm.
who's holding a wooden palette. You know those old school palettes?
Oh, yeah.
And it has all the different colors. You take the acrylic and you make little.
Mm-hmm. So the colors in this analogy represent the different beats of the Exodus thing?
The language and imagery of the Exodus story are like different colors. So you have a little like slavery and oppression. You have the crying out. That's an orange. And you have God remembering or God seeing, God raising up a deliverer through the waters. That's like blue. And the words associated with those moments in Exodus story, they're on the palette. And then the gospel authors, they've received the Jesus traditions, the eyewitness memory traditions that were all memorized and passed down by the apostles. And then as they put those into writing and shape them, they add in vocabulary and little colorful twists to link it all together.
Hmm.
And that's just how the gospel authors wrote these stories.
Okay.
Ooh, but they are not just doing it because they thought it was cool. They are actually telling the story of Jesus this way because this is how the Hebrew Bible authors wrote the stories of Moses particularly. So first I want to start by looking at something cool in Moses' story in Exodus that the gospel authors pick up and apply to how they tell the story of Jesus. So a Jewish scholar, Michael Fishbane, who wrote a series of essays called Text and Texture, is the name of the book. Let's like select literary readings of biblical narratives. But he has some rad essays on the literary design of the Exodus stories. He's the first person that introduced me to this, that the story of Moses in Exodus 1 through 4 is portraying Moses as somebody who is experiencing in his own personal life all the beats of what will happen to his peoples once he goes back and confronts Pharaoh.
You mentioned this when we were going through it, yeah.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, so he's one of the boys born into slavery
mm-hmm.
in Exodus chapter 1. So he's supposed to be one of those boys who's thrown into the Nile River.
Mm.
That's at the end of chapter 1.
Yeah.
And he's one of the boys who apparently lived because those Hebrew midwives
rescued him.
Didn't kill the sons, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Exodus 2 begins with Moses' mom secretly giving birth to him and hiding him. And then he actually is put into the Nile River.
Yeah.
So in a way, he's
rescued through the waters.
Yeah. And he's put into a little basket called an ark. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that. So he actually goes through a deliverance through the waters. He's saved from Pharaoh's like murderous program by going through the waters.
Mm-hmm.
And he floats right into Pharaoh's house. The daughter of Pharaoh picks him up. So then he, you know, famously goes out and he sees one of his own Israelite people being oppressed by one of his adopted family's people, the Egyptians. So he murders the Egyptian. Doesn't go well.
Mm.
So Pharaoh finds out. So he flees. And then he goes and lives in the wilderness. God leads him to a well where there's water, and then a wife And then he discovers a family and he's fruitful and multiplying in the wilderness. And then he finds his way to Mount Sinai with a bunch of sheep.
And why the sheep?
Encounters, he's going to lead a bunch of people there who he's going to call sheep later on at Mount Sinai. So from slavery to Mount Sinai and all the beats in between are all of the language and imagery of what will happen to the people. They are enslaved in slavery.
Yeah.
God is going to challenge Pharaoh through Moses. There will be a confrontation like what Moses had with that Egyptian. He struck him with his hand, but now it's Yahweh's hand that's going to strike Egypt. It's going to lead to a water deliverance, a Passover deliverance, and then a water deliverance. Then they're going to go into the wilderness. God will provide water for them and then lead them to a mountain. Mm. It's almost like what qualifies Moses to bring the people through this terrible journey is the fact that he himself has already gone through it.
Mm.
So that's something at work in the Exodus story. The gospel authors are totally in tune with that, especially Matthew. Mm-hmm. In Matthew chapters 1 through 4 presents the birth story and early events of the life of Jesus in exactly the same way, and sometimes using the language of these very stories that do this in Moses' story. So, for example, Matthew begins with the genealogy. And then the first thing that happens after that is the story where the angel comes to Joseph, who is, you learn from the genealogy, Jesus' adopted dad. He learns Mary, the woman to whom he's engaged, is pregnant. He thinks he's going to divorce her, but actually, no, you're going to marry her, and she's going to give birth to Yeshua because he will save his people from their sins. Ooh, that's significant right there, even right there. So this is Matthew chapter 1, verse 21. Mary will give birth to a son. You will call his name Yeshua, Jesus in Greek, but Yeshua, because he will save. So his name is Yahweh saves, but then the angel says, he will save his people from their sins. Remember that motif we explored in Genesis? How did the Israelites end up in Egypt?
Yeah, their own folly.
Over many generations.
Yeah.
So their own sin has landed them in this state of exile and oppression. Now, here is this generation of Israel, and they're in the land promised to Abraham long ago, but...
Yeah, they're under oppression. So you could say, I'm going to save these people from their oppressors.
Right, but it doesn't say that.
I'm going to save them from their moral failure, their own... Their own mess
that has contributed to and created part of the mess that they're sitting in. So after Jesus is famously born in Bethlehem, then when Herod finds out because of the astrologers, Eastern astrologers,
the Magi
who come, that's a whole thing we don't have time to talk about. But he learns that there was a rival king to him born in Bethlehem, and he becomes unhinged, as they say. And so he sends a bunch of soldiers to Bethlehem to find every boy who was born under a certain age and just kill them.
That's one strategy.
So all of a sudden, even right there, Herod is being set on analogy to Pharaoh, killing all the boys in that move. But the irony is that Herod is he claimed to be partially Israelite, and then... They're in the land. So the land promised Abraham has become the Egypt-like place of murderous oppression.
Yeah.
That's the twist.
Yeah.
So, interestingly, in Matthew chapter 2, verse 13, an angel appears to Joseph in another dream who says, get up, take the child and his mother, and flee to Egypt. And stay there until whenever I speak to you. Because Herod is about to seek the child to destroy him. Getting up, he took the child and mother, he departed to Egypt. This is exactly the language used to describe what happens after Pharaoh finds out Moses has killed the Egyptian. When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he was seeking to kill Moses, and so Moses fled from Pharaoh, and he went to the land of Midian.
Okay.
He flees from Egypt.
To Midian.
To Midian, yeah.
So for Jesus, Egypt is Midian.
Yeah, for Jesus, Israel is Egypt.
Yeah, Israel is Egypt. Herod is the Pharaoh.
Herod is Pharaoh.
And Pharaoh's after him, mm-hmm. and he needs to flee, and he's going to flee to Egypt.
He's going to flee to Egypt, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So Egypt has become the refuge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everything's getting inverted here in a clever way. So they go down there. Then in Matthew chapter 2, verse 19, we're told, after Herod came to his death, a messenger of the Lord in shining appearance came to Joseph, saying in a dream, "Get up, take the child, go to the land of Israel, for those who seek the life of your child have died." So getting up, he took the child and the mother, they went to the land of Israel. Now, those who seek the life of the child, that is curious.
It was just Herod. Is that why?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, why?
Herod and his crew.
Herod, yeah. And maybe you just think Herod and his, what do you say, his cronies?
Yeah.
His bunch. Yeah, something like that. But it is interesting because it was presented just singularly, Herod sought.
Yeah.
Like this was the actual language used up in Matthew 2:13. Yeah. Herod is seeking the child.
Yeah.
Now it's those who were seeking the life of your child have died. Very interestingly, after Moses met God on Mount Sinai in Exodus 4, verse 19, Yahweh said to Moses in Midian, "Go return to Egypt, because all those who were seeking your life have died." So Moses took his wife and his sons, and they got on a donkey, and
This was after the burning bush encounter?
After the burning bush,
okay.
Yeah.
So it's the same phrase?
It's exactly the same phrase.
Hmm.
Even those seeking the life, it's copy and paste.
Got it.
It's as if Matthew put those who seek the life as almost like a little...
Yeah, a little wink.
A little wink.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in other words, what Matthew's doing, it seems, is he's copy and pasting from Exodus 4:19, and even though it introduces kind of a little logical road bump in the story, because they're like, wait, I thought it was just Pharaoh. Now it's a group of people seeking. He's cool with that little road bump. So, but I'm just paying attention to the narrative technique, that pure logical inner story consistency is flexible for him.
Yeah.
What matters most is that you get the Exodus hyperlink.
Yeah.
So Jesus goes back to the land with his family. He grows up in Nazareth. That's the end of chapter 2.
And this whole thing is significant, not just because, hey, look, Jesus is a new type of Moses. There's that. But also, there's something about, just like Moses went through his own Exodus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That in some way, I mean, you said qualifies, but in some way, like...
I know.
What are we talking about there? There's this, there is a theme of that Jesus will experience the things that we experience, that he is a high priest that can, he understands the test. He understands the whole human drama.
Yeah, qualify, you're right. I've often struggled to know what word, so I appreciate your pressing on that. Moses experienced in miniature in his life what then the people as in macro experience in their communal life. So we're kind of back to the way that the Exodus story becomes like a set of glasses. That you can think about your own life, your community's life, or the life of the cosmos. Like, it's a story that can serve all those as a frame.
Okay. And this is focusing on an individual's life.
Yeah.
And there is just something interesting here, whether it's Moses or Jesus, I suppose, of if there's going to be someone to lead a community through, it seems kind of important, maybe even essential, that they've experienced it in some way.
Yep. Yeah. Actually, I appreciate you bringing up the like the priestly solidarity or the identification that the priest goes through. Because ritually, like when the high priest would surrender a blameless animal, send it up to God in the flames, but then also take its blood and go into the tent, that's all on behalf of others, but he's the one doing it. So it's as if Moses and now Jesus is also replaying in their own life Israel's history. You know, there's an English word that became really significant to early Christian theologians. The English word is called recapitulation.
Okay.
Which comes from a Greek word that Paul used in the letter to the Ephesians, anakephaliosis. Whew, well, I know, so many syllables.
Kepha, is that head?
Anakephaliao, to head up, to sum up. He says that God's plan was always to sum up all things in heaven on earth in the Messiah.
Okay.
Sum up is using a math metaphor.
Mm-hmm. To head up is a kind of a, what, a river metaphor or a...
Yeah. Everything comes to a head.
Yeah, everything comes to a head. What's the head of this river? What's the...
Yeah.
It's the source.
It's the source. Yeah. But in this sense, it's that what happened in and through the Messiah, this is what's in Paul's mind, is what everything is about.
Mm.
So that anywhere you go now in creation, what you're going to see is some playing out in some other form of what was happening in the life of the Messiah. Recapitulation.
Yeah. Recapitulation.
So recapitulation, you could say Moses' story in Exodus 1 through 4 pre-capitulates Israel's Exodus story.
Okay.
Because he's doing it beforehand.
Mm.
Now here's Jesus centuries after the Exodus story, and he is recapitulating.
So bringing it all together, connecting the dots, full circle moment, closing the loop. That's corporate lingo. Let's close the loop on this.
Yeah.
Summing up the story when the big picture comes into focus.
Mm.
Are those getting to it?
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Okay.
So let's look at another moment in the early stories of Jesus where the loop gets closed. We circle back to see the whole circle come together.
Okay.
Matthew chapter 3, verse 1. Now, in those days, John the Baptizer, John the Immerser, came announcing in the wilderness of Judea, "Turn around, the kingdom of the skies has come near." And then Matthew interrupts. He says, "Okay, dear reader, this is the one who was spoken about by Isaiah, saying, quote, a voice crying in the wilderness." And then what does the voice say? Quote, "Prepare the way of the Lord."
This is the highway.
"Make his path straight."
Right?
That highway. There's the highway.
Which chapter was this in Isaiah?
This is Isaiah 40. Opening lines of Isaiah 40.
Yeah, okay. The voice of the one calling in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the highway leading people out of exile back into the land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just like there was a road out.
Yeah.
Exodus means the road out.
This is the road through.
And then the road in between is a wilderness highway, the road they take on the road into the promised land.
Mm.
And Isaiah developed this motif. We did a whole episode on that.
Yep.
Isaiah chapter 11, the highway gets introduced and becomes a main idea. But remember, by the end of Isaiah, it became a metaphor because you can go on the road even if you're back in the land.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah.
So repenting in the language of Isaiah 58, turn around.
Yeah, because he's not asking Israel to actually go on any sort of pilgrimage.
Mm-hmm. Right. So in quoting Isaiah 40 at the beginning of Matthew 3 here, this is Matthew saying, dear reader, it's the new Exodus moment.
Mm.
It's all coming together, all coming to a head.
Well, a climactic Exodus moment,
because
there's been tons of new Exodus moments.
Yeah, yes.
But by quoting Isaiah 40, it's like, this is like the significant Exodus moment.
Yep. So what we're then told down in verse 5 of Matthew 3 is that John went out to the Jordan River, and he was having all these people get dunked in the Jordan River while confessing their sins. And you're like, oh yeah, that's what the angel said, that Jesus was born to save his people from their sins. And now here's John saying, let's name our sins and go through the Jordan River again.
Hmm.
The Jordan River was super important in the Exodus storyline.
Yeah.
And it's the mirror image of the deliverance through the waters from Pharaoh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But this is preparation. This is framed as preparation.
Yeah. So prepare the highway for Yahweh to come back in his glory to return to the land, while his people also turn around and prepare and get ready themselves.
To get on that highway, you got to go through the waters.
That's right. So if, for Isaiah, it was dual travelers. There's Yahweh
on
the highway.
That's right.
And Israel needs to get
Yahweh
on the highway.
Yahweh goes first.
Yep. He leads the way.
He leads the way.
That's right.
Yeah.
So what we're expecting is a repentant remnant of Israel who will
Go on the way.
Yep. Repent, turn around and take the way. And also we're waiting for the glory of Yahweh to come on the highway.
And lead the way.
And it's all connected to the Jordan River, which was where not Moses, Moses didn't lead them through the waters there, but a guy named
Yeshua.
A guy named
Joshua.
And a guy named Yahweh saves. Or in Greek, Jesus.
Jesus.
So we're waiting for a Jesus figure. I mean, it's just too much.
Yeah.
So right after the story of John and what he said and did, Matthew 3:13, then Yeshua, Jesus, came from Galilee to the Jordan River to John in order to be immersed by him.
I'm going to go lead the way.
Yep. He's going to go through the waters, like Moses.
Hmm.
So Moses went through the waters, and that's what set
in the
off
ark.
The whole thing in the ark. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he later led the people through the waters.
Hmm.
So it's as if this becomes Jesus's ark moment, going through the waters. John tried to stop him, just like, whoa, what? No, no, you should baptize me. Yeah. I'm an Israelite who needs to be baptized. And Yeshua says to him, no.
I need to go through too.
Yeah. This is to fulfill all righteousness. This is what has to happen. Such an interesting little phrase. Doing what is right.
For Jesus, it was to be in right relationship with God and others. He needs to go through it too.
Yeah. For Jesus, it's necessary that he himself goes through symbolically here what is ahead for all of the people.
Because in some way, this is also foreshadowing kind of an ultimate baptism for him.
Yeah. In fact, let's go back to Exodus. So Moses, all the sons were dying. So Moses is delivered through the waters, which is a kind of death. Like she hands him off. His mom hands him off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and she doesn't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's delivered out of the waters into the house of Pharaoh. Culminating that, when God brings justice on Pharaoh and he visits what Pharaoh did to Israel, brings that back on Pharaoh on the night of Passover. And once again, all of the boys' lives are at risk again. And there, the lives of the boys are saved, not by being put in a basket, a teva, but by going into a house, which is the word for ark backwards in Hebrew. So there's two, remember, there's two deliverances. There's a deliverance through the waters and deliverance at Passover.
Through the house.
And so it's as if Jesus is going through a symbolic water deliverance here to prepare and get the story moving that'll be going towards like a Passover-like deliverance, which will be the culmination story. So Moses went through the waters as a mirror image leading up to the Passover deliverance. And so there's something similar at work in the Gospels, that what's happening in the Jordan points forward to another deliverance that'll be also at Passover.
Moses goes through the waters in the ark as a baby.
Yeah.
All of Israel goes through the plague in a house.
Yeah.
Of refuge.
Yes.
That is how God rescues Israel. And so if we're talking about this theme of being rescued from our oppressors, but also from ourselves, and being brought into something new, and if there's someone going to lead us through, who's going to be like Moses, but also we'll find out more than Moses, you're saying that Jesus here is enacting the moment of going through the waters like Moses first did. So Jesus is saying, I'm going to go through. I'm going to lead you guys through the ultimate chaos waters into the ultimate new land. It's necessary for me to identify with this. So much so that it fulfills righteousness.
Fulfills doing right by God. This is how we are going to do right by God and each other, is by doing it this way. Jesus fully identifying with his people in their need to be delivered. And in doing so, he becomes like baby Moses, setting in motion all the events that will lead up to a Passover-like deliverance. And that's the same arc of the story in Exodus 1 through 15, as it is in the Gospels. And what's fascinating is all four Gospels feature John the Baptist at the beginning. This is a way to introduce Jesus and what happened here at the Jordan, all four Gospels, in different ways, but all four Gospels have it at the beginning. So there's something foundational that Jesus saw here, that he needed to go participate in this, and that this was sort of like, what do you say, the inciting event that got the ball rolling for his announcing the kingdom of God, and that all led to Jerusalem and Passover.
Hmm.
So what happens is that after his baptism, there's importantly, he's identified by a heavenly voice, and God's spirit descends in a bird-like form, and there's a heavenly voice that quotes from three different places in the Hebrew Bible saying, "This is my beloved son with whom I am well pleased." Next line, Jesus was then led into the wilderness.
Hmm.
You're like, yes, of course.
Through the waters to the wilderness.
Yeah. That was Moses' journey through the waters into the house of Pharaoh, and then from the house of Pharaoh into the wilderness.
Right.
Israel went out of the waters right into the wilderness. It ended up being for 40 years.
Hmm.
Here, Jesus is led into the wilderness by the Spirit, where he was tested by the slanderer, an accuser.
Mm-hmm.
And after fasting for 40 days and nights, he was awful hungry.
Yeah.
Like you do.
So Israel, 40 years, Jesus, he economizes this.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And testing was a theme in the wilderness stories, both in Exodus.
Yeah.
And in Numbers, the word testing appears often.
Mm-hmm. And then relying on God to provide on his terms.
Provide bread, manna.
Yeah.
Manna, which is called the bread of heaven, is what Moses calls it.
Yeah.
In Exodus 16. So in the three tests, which are all about Jesus's identity, if you are the Son of God, then why are you starving? If you are the Son of God, you know, make the Father deliver you on your timeline, not his. And if you are the Son of God, destined to rule the world,
I can help you.
I can help you with that. I've got some ways.
Yeah.
And then Jesus responds by quoting from Deuteronomy 8 two times, Deuteronomy 6 one time. And he quotes from speeches of Moses where Moses is recounting the wilderness journeys of the 40 years.
Yeah.
So it's really clear.
Yeah.
So again, notice how the Exodus motif doesn't just involve the oppression, a deliverer, and the water deliverance. That's key. But the wilderness is intimately connected.
Yeah.
The road in between.
Hmm.
And same with Matthew's retelling of Jesus' story, the wilderness plays a key role. So that's there, Matthew chapter 4. Then what we're told is that John the Baptist gets arrested, chapter 4, verse 12 of Matthew. And so Jesus went back to Galilee, but he doesn't go to where he grew up. Excuse me, he does, but he doesn't go back there to live. He moves, and he goes down to live by the lake, the Sea of Galilee. And then Matthew quotes from the book of Isaiah, a long quote that we don't have time to talk about, but says that in this land, which is full of non-Israelites, the sunrise, the light is going to shine in the darkness.
Mm.
So he moves through the waters, then through the wilderness, and then he lands in a classic tribal inheritance spot of Zebulun and Naphtali. That's what the Isaiah quote has. So he goes to the promised land, and there's sunrise, and the light dawns. And he starts saying, the kingdom of God is here. Let's rule the land together, but in a new way.
He's kind of saying, like, we're in the promised land.
Yeah, heaven.
We're here.
Kingdom of heaven, it's landed right here, right now. Let's do this.
We can start doing it.
How good is life?
We don't have to wait.
How good is life for us all now? So it's kind of like a Joshua in the land. We made it.
We're here.
At least I made it. So he recapitulated in his own self, landing up in Galilee as the new Joshua. And good news, everybody. The kingdom of the skies is touching down.
You don't have to live as a slave. Which is weird to tell someone who's being like, what's the word?
Well, they're being exploited by tax collectors in league with Rome and
Yeah, but Rome is subjugating them. What's the word?
Occupying.
They're occupying.
Yeah, occupying their land.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's a weird thing to say, okay, the kingdom of God is here. It's like, well, actually, the Romans are still right there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But he's saying this moving from slavery into freedom, like, this can happen now. We can do this now.
Yeah. Yep, that's right. So after the wilderness, Jesus goes up to Galilee. And once again, specifically Matthew, Mark, and Luke all have lots of material they've brought together of what Jesus is doing. He goes around healing people. He calls it liberation, freeing people from oppression. But this time the oppression or the oppressors is sickness,
illness, demons,
evil spirits. And there are multiple times in Matthew, I was just working on this the other day, where Jesus heals somebody. And so remember how the word salvation is really key. It's introduced as like the main word in the Exodus story.
Rescue. Yeah.
So there are multiple healing stories in the Gospels where, for example, in Matthew chapter 9, there's a woman who has had ongoing, nonstop menstrual bleeding for years. And she sees Jesus and she walks up and touches, you know, his cloak. For she said to herself, and I'm reading from the, I'll just read from the New American Standard. If only I touch his garment, I will get well. And Jesus turned and said, daughter, take courage. Your faith has made you well. At once the woman was made well. I'll go to NIV. If only I touch his cloak, I will be healed. Jesus says, your faith has healed you. The woman was healed. The Greek word used in all of those cases is the word sozo, to be saved. It's the word saved. It gets translated healed.
In the context of the story.
But that's the translators interpreting the word.
Yeah.
But the actual word is she experienced salvation.
Yeah.
She was saved from the sickness.
Is that because when we use the word saved in kind of modern Christianity, often we are specifically talking about this moment of kind of like ultimate final rescue from death?
Yeah. That's right.
But more generally, this word just means rescue from anything.
From some kind of danger or something that's threatening you, preventing you from experiencing wellness, well-being.
And this word, though, the first time it shows up is in relation to being rescued, Israel being rescued from Egypt.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So Israel is rescued from Egypt. How'd they end up in Egypt? Well, because of the sins of their ancestors.
And because of Pharaoh is morally corrupt.
That's right. And why are we out here outside of Eden?
Yeah.
Sinning against each other?
Yeah.
Well, because of...
Because of all of our
ancestors.
Yeah. Our ancestors' bad decisions, our own bad decisions, but then also then the oppression of others and their bad decisions.
That's right.
It's all a big jumbled mess.
That's right. And all of this was launched and kind of capitulated in the story of Adam and Eve, human and living one, who foolishly reject the word and wisdom of God, listen to the snake, and are exiled that lands them in the land of dust and death.
Right.
Where they start sinning against each other.
And then in this now dust and death.
Yeah. And mortality
there's
and
disease.
Failing bodies.
And mortality.
And all that.
And so to be rescued from this is, yes, to be rescued from our own folly, rescued from the oppression of others, but then also just rescued from disease.
Yeah.
And death.
That's right. To talk about the healing of someone's body as salvation, which is what the story does, it actually assumes a cosmic Exodus frame. Where we're outside of Eden in dying, sick bodies. And what that tells us is our need to get back into Eden to experience the infinite gift of life.
Yeah.
And so in a way, just a little taste of that transforms this woman's body becomes a kind of exodus from her sickness. So you can use the word salvation.
Okay.
It's a very beautiful, touching story about Jesus and a woman. But the language used evokes the bigger Exodus frame to make sense of why would we call that an act of salvation. Because there are perfectly good words for heal that are used in other stories, in these very chapters.
But it would be common to use this word in this context, right? Or is it uncommon?
Well, I think there are other words for heal that are used to describe when the leper is healed or when the blind man.
Okay.
So why salvation in this story?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Jesus goes around saving people like a new Moses figure, providing them, like Moses providing bread for a bunch of people in the wilderness, the loaves and the fishes.
Mm-hmm.
That's in a wilderness place. So there's all this stuff happening.
Yeah.
That is showing like, oh man, Jesus is like a new Moses and Joshua leading us.
I see.
Into a new promised land and the kingdom of God is here.
If the kingdom of God is here.
Yeah.
Then I need to be let out of the situations that I'm in where I'm not experiencing it.
Yeah.
That could be death and disease.
Yeah.
That could be a lack of food. But it could also be repenting from some choices I'm making that's keeping me enslaved.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, of course, there's a bigger, brighter horizon on the day when we can live at peace with each other and where we're not under Rome. Like that'll be when heaven becomes earth and earth becomes heaven. But Jesus is launching it, like starting it. It's infiltrated earth.
Yeah.
Then you get these little tastes. These narratives are like little outbreaks of heaven on earth.
Mm.
Or you could think of it as outbreaks of liberation from earth into the life of heaven.
Yeah.
There's an important story right after a whole bunch of healing and deliverance stories where Jesus takes his disciples to a place called Caesarea Philippi. It was a royal palace city for the sons of Herod. And he famously asked Peter, says, who do y'all say that I am? And Peter says, you're the Messiah. And then it becomes real clear that Peter has no idea what that means because Jesus says, exactly. And so I'm going to go to Jerusalem to die. And then they freak out. So they have to iron out that. And then we're told Matthew 17 begins saying, and 6 days later, which is a not so subtle way of saying.
On the seventh day.
On the seventh day, Jesus took Peter, James, and John, his brother, and brought them to a high mountain. So the seventh day, taking Israelites up to a mountain, this is all.
Cosmic Eden.
Yeah.
Language.
Oh, okay. Cosmic Eden language. It's the biggest frame.
Okay.
But this is what Moses did after bringing them through the wilderness.
To Sinai.
He brought them to Mount Sinai. And then on the seventh day, he went up.
Oh.
This is at the end of Exodus chapter 24.
Okay.
Exodus 24:15. So Moses went up the mountain. The cloud covered it. The glory of Yahweh settled on the mountain. And the cloud covered it for?
Six days.
And he called to Moses on the seventh day from the midst of the cloud, and he goes up into the cloud. So Moses meets Yahweh in the cloud and fire on the seventh day at the top of the mountain.
Okay.
Jesus, on the seventh day, took these guys along, brought them up to a mountain, and he was metamorphed, transformed in front of them. His face was shining like the sun. His clothes became white like the light. And all of a sudden, who's there appearing next to him? Moses and Elijah. And they were just having a chat. They were talking together.
You know, when we talked about the story last, you brought up, which has really stuck with me, is if Jesus is kind of being compared to the Moses going up the mountain, then it's kind of strange then that he meets Moses on the mountain.
Yeah.
And so...
Yes.
You talked about how Jesus shining was in a way like Moses shining, but even more so, it's now he is Yahweh's glory shining. So when Moses went up the mountain to meet with Yahweh and experiencing Yahweh's presence, this narrative is now making you imagine that what Moses was experiencing or could experience was
something like this
scene
right here. Yeah, that's right.
Meeting Jesus.
Yeah, so it's as if Matthew's been setting us up to see Jesus as Moses plus. But now it's like Moses plus Yahweh.
Yeah.
This story is the twist in the plot, where not only is Jesus like Moses, a faithful Israelite,
yeah,
who's going to be loyal to the covenant and lead Israel like Moses did, but then even more, Jesus is also the God of Israel, who became visible to Moses.
Mm.
So when Moses' face starts shining after his encounter on the mountain,
yeah,
this is not saying Jesus is like Moses because his face shone.
Right.
It's more saying Moses' face was shining because he met somebody
like Jesus.
Who
he met the glory of Yahweh.
The source of all light.
And what is Jesus but that made human?
So Moses' face was imitating the pre-incarnate Jesus' face,
not
the other way around.
Or Moses' face was emanating
the
glory of Yahweh.
Yeah.
And Jesus is the glory of Yahweh made human.
That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's probably significant why Elijah is there too, because both Moses and Elijah met the glory of Yahweh on Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
And this is the narrative's way of saying Jesus is the one whom Moses and Elijah met on the mountain.
Hmm.
So the transformation that Jesus undergoes here is not a transformation from a normal dude into a semi-divine being. The transformation refers to a transformation in their perception.
Ah, yeah. They can see who he is.
They get a glimpse of who he was and is to come, so to speak. Yeah, they see him. And it was this story that prompted the earliest Christian Bible nerds to go back and see in all of the stories of the Hebrew Bible about the angel of Yahweh. Well, what did it mean for Yahweh to show up in Eden walking?
Yeah.
In some sort of humanoid form that Adam and Eve could talk with. What did Abram see when Yahweh appeared in the form of a smoking flame?
Mm-hmm.
Or who was the messenger of Yahweh in the bush, in
for
the
Moses,
fire, talking with Moses? Who's the fourth man in the furnace of Daniel and the three friends? And they saw the pre-incarnate Jesus there.
Mm.
But it's because in all those stories, there's a humanoid Yahweh appearing in some kind of visible human-like form that people encountered and talked to.
What could that possibly mean, a pre-incarnate humanoid form?
Well, it's just saying,
to become humanoid was to become incarnated.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
There's a figure, maybe, appearing like a human. Like when Ezekiel has his visions of Yahweh's glory, he sees a divine chariot mobile, and then he keeps saying, I saw one who was like the appearance of something like an Adam, human.
Okay.
And that's always a human-like figure.
Okay.
Whereas the gospel authors are saying that glory went through the process of conception.
Yeah.
It was human. Formed in a womb.
So this thing that we could only describe as human-like, but was the glory of Yahweh.
Yeah.
In a way that starts to become almost synonymous with Yahweh in certain stories.
Yes, yeah.
Of the angel of Yahweh just all of a sudden being Yahweh, like in the burning bush.
Mm-hmm.
That then going in to the womb of Mary and then being united with humanity in a new way, that's the incarnation.
That's the incarnation, yeah. Actually, yeah, so funny. We've been doing this for 10 years.
Yeah.
You came up with an amazing line when we did the spiritual being series that I now use to talk about this.
Okay. Talk about what? Incarnation?
Yeah. Because we talk about the angel of the Lord appearing in the Hebrew Bible.
Yeah.
You came up with this phrase, the angel of the Lord is God appearing as a human.
Hmm.
And Jesus, the gospel authors claim, is God become human.
Hmm.
The difference between appearing as versus becoming.
Yeah, we wrestled with this before.
yeah, and you came up with that phrase.
Oh.
And I think that captures
excellently
what the apostles are trying to say here.
Yeah.
There was a difference between the pre-incarnation appearances.
Appearing as versus becoming.
Incarnation.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And Christians have been trying to work out the implications of that in language ever since, in the history of the Christian creeds. You know, from Apostles' Creed to the Nicene Creed, Chalcedon and all that. But it's all right here in Hebrew Bible meditative hyperlink style.
Like, yeah, not in a theology dictionary style.
Yeah. No, yeah, in a narrative style. Now, here's just one more little twist.
Okay.
Luke, the Gospel of Luke, also has an account of this mountaintop moment, but he has one little tweak that he offers. He tells us what Moses and Jesus and Elijah were talking about. I mean, who wouldn't want to know?
Yeah.
Like, what did they talk about?
Yeah. He's got a mic.
Yeah, totally.
Right. You don't really watch sports, do you?
That's not really a thing I do.
I don't really much either.
People do, and
people
should, and that's great.
Yeah, I don't watch a lot of sports, but now they really mic the field really well.
Oh.
And every once in a while, you get to hear these little conversations. This is like this whole new depth to the game.
Oh, what are they talking about?
What are they talking about?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's it. This is that.
It's that.
Luke gives us that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, right when Luke says, look, there were two guys talking with him, Moses and Elijah, who appeared in glory. They were speaking of, with Jesus, about his, and then he uses the Greek word, exodus. They were speaking about Jesus's exodus, which he was about to accomplish in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just right there. You could say this is like the smoking gun of the Exodus motif in the Gospels. But it's not referring to his childhood.
Yeah, we've been talking about his childhood as an Exodus.
Yeah.
Going through the waters, going through the wilderness. But there's another Exodus that he's going to go through.
Yeah. So this points forward to whatever Jesus was doing by going to Jerusalem. He's about to accomplish an Exodus. And so, which is why the significance of Passover week and everything that happens there is all so packed with meaning to understand the meaning of Jesus' death as an Exodus moment.
Yeah.
So with that, let's take a pause. And then our next step will be to look at the Exodus story at work in the Passover story of Jesus' death and resurrection.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Bible Project Podcast. Next week, we'll explore the connection between the death of Jesus and one of the most iconic moments in the Exodus story, the Passover.
Jesus did this on purpose. Like, he planned his showdown in Jerusalem to be timed with this most important sacred annual feast. And is that important for us? Can that inform the meaning of his death? And maybe this will help us get into Jesus' own intentions and the meaning he saw in his death.
Bible Project is a crowdfunded nonprofit, and we exist to experience the Bible as a unified story that leads to Jesus. Everything that we make, this podcast, the videos, we've got classes, we've got guide pages, everything is free because of the generous support of thousands of people just like you. So thank you so much for being a part of this with us.
Hi, my name is Brant, and I'm from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hello, my name is Wei Zi Yang, and I'm from Singapore. I first heard about Bible Project through the internet, and I use the Bible Project for my daily devotionals, my daily Bible study, and also for deep dives into specific books of the Bible.
I use Bible Project to lead classrooms for my church. My favorite thing about Bible Project are the podcast and learning from Dr. Tim Mackey and John Collins.
And also that it has a whole variety of educational platforms, including written articles, short video clips, conversations, dialogues, as well as the current sermon series. We believe the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus.
We're a crowdfunded project by people like me. Find free videos, articles, podcasts, classes, and more on the Bible Project app and at BibleProject.com.
Hy is ingeskakel by die program Krag van die Bybel. Onthou ook dat jy kan enige tyd inskakel van maandag tot saterdag na Kaapse Kansel en baie konfidensieel jy kan gesels met Bybelse beraders. Skakel gerus Radio Kaapse Kansel by 021 180
0214 021 180 5744. Ons gaan nou luister en saam lees uit Matteus die volgende gedeelte wat ons in hierdie program hanteer, en in hierdie proses dan ook werklik mediteer, reflekteer op wat staan hier in hierdie gedeelte. Ook veral waar ons nou in hierdie feestyd ingaan in Desember, wat nou voorlê, en waar ons ook Kersfees vier en geniet. En toch wanneer ons lees in Matteus 2 van vers 16, dan vind die mens die realiteit van die wêreld waarin Jesus as baba, as klein kind, opgegroei het. Ons lees in Matteus 2 vers 16, toe Herodes agterkom dat hy deur die sterrekenners om die bos gelei is, was hy briesend. En hy het in Bethlehem en die hele omliggende gebied al die seentjies van 2 jaar en jonger om die lewe laat bring, in ooreenstemming met die tyd wat hy noukeurig van die sterrekenners verneem het. Toe is vervul wat deur die profeet Jeremia gesê is. 'N stem is in Rama gehoor, 'n droewige gehuil en 'n luide rouklag. Rachel huil oor haar kinders en sy weier om vertroos te word, omdat hulle nie meer daar is nie. Herodes het gesterf en kyk, daar het in Egypte 'n engel van die Here in 'n droom aan Josef verskyn en gesê, staan op, neem die kind en sy moeder en gaan na die land Israel, want die mense wat die kind om die lewe wou bring, is dood. Hy het opgestaan en die kindjie en sy moeder saamgeneem en in die land Israel aangekom. Maar toe hy hoor dat Archelaus in die plek van sy vader Herodes oor Judea regeer, was hy bang om daarheen te gaan. Nadat hy in 'n droom 'n opdrag van God ontvang het, het hy na die landstreek Galilea vertrek en in 'n dorp met die naam Nazareth gaan woon, sodat vervul sou word wat deur die profeet gesê is, hy sal 'n Nasareener genoem word. Ons het nou net gelees uit die 2020 vertaling, Afrikaanse vertaling. Dit is nogal belangrik dat wanneer Jesus aan die einde van Matteus die opdrag gee aan sy disippels en sê, aan my is gegee alle gesag in die hemel en op die aarde. Die goddelike gesag waaronder ek myself plaas wanneer ek Jesus volg, is die van 'n persoon, Jesus ons Here. Die werklike opgestane Jesus. Hy is die een wat ek volg, en ek aanvaar sy gesag oor my lewe. En een van die maniere waarop ek my aan hierdie gesag onderwerp en hoor en verstaan wie Jesus is en hoe om hom te volg, is in 'n gemeenskap met ander gelowiges, om saam met ander gelowiges. En dit kan jou vrou wees, jou huisgesin, medegelowiges, in 'n huiskerk, in 'n gemeente, waar ook al, maar om saam met ander gelowiges hierdie tekste, die Bybel te lees, en om gehoorsaam aan hom te wees, saam met ander. Dit is hoe ek die gesag van die Bybel erken. En dit kom van die gesag van 'n werklike persoon, Jesus ons Here. En dit is wat ons ook nou geluister het in die potgooi van Bible Projects. En dit is so belangrik om dit net in kort op te som. Wat ons nou gelees het ook, van die vlug van Josef en Maria met die kindjie Jesus na Egypte. En die verskyning van die engel en hulle terugreis. en dan nie na Bethlehem waar hulle gewoon het te gaan nie, maar na Nazareth. Die gesag van die woorde wat ons lees, kom van ons Here, van Jesus, en daarom is het gesagvol. So wanneer ons dit nou lees, hierdie deel, in hierdie gedeelte, hierdie verse, van die vlug, betyds, net betyds, die vlug van hierdie gesin na Egypte, dan sit ons terug, en soos wat ons nou geleer het, ons vra hierdie eerste vraag, wat staan hier geskryf? Wat hoor ek? Ons lees hier, dat Herodes maak 'n hele dorp se babas dood, uit vrees vir hierdie baba, die koning van die Jode, wat die sterrekenners uit die ooste kom eer bewys het. Maar nou, wanneer ons daaroor dink, dan is Herodes een van die magtigste mense in Israel. En hierdie magtige en wrede koning word bedreig en voel bedreig deur 'n baba. En deur hierdie baba gaan hy dan oor, nie deur nie, maar as gevolg van hierdie boodskap wat hy kry van die baba. En hierdie vrees in sy hart, al is hy die magtigste mens, of een van die magtige mense, behalwe nou die Romeinse Ryk, wat hom ook aangestel het as koning hier, is dat hy tot hierdie vreeslike daad oorgaan, om al die kinders onder 2 jaar dood te maak in Bethlehem. So in die kern van die Kersfees story, waarvoor ons nou voorberei en hoor en luister, die kern van hierdie story is 'n baba wat die Here die koning van die hele wêreld gaan wees. Selfs die Romeinse keiser, vergeet nog van Herodes, is klein teenoor hom. Al dink hulle nie so nie. Al dink hulle dat hulle magtig is, is hulle klein teenoor hom. En ons weet ook, wanneer ons dit lees, hoe vlug hierdie gesin vlug, Josef en Maria en Jesus, dat baie mense hierdie Jesus nog gaan ervaar as 'n bedreiging. Net so ook sal hulle sy volgelinge, sy navolgers, die Christene wat toe Christene begin genoem is binnekort, gaan hulle sien hierdie gelowiges, die volgers van Jesus, as 'n bedreiging en hulle ook vervolg. So Herodes gooi hierdie magspeletjie en die magtiges gooi hierdie magspeletjies. Maar Jesus is magtiger as enige een van hulle. Maar dan weet ons ook nou reeds dat hy gaan sterf as gevolg van die feit dat hy die verlosser is, die magtigste koning. En die stryd dan teen hierdie magtige baba is so groot dat sy ouers na Egipte moet vlug vir sy lewe en net betyds uit Bethlehem kom voor hierdie groot moord plaasvind. Die wrede Herodes, sonder om 'n ooglid te verhoor, wat so baie babas doodmaak. En later ook uit sy paranoia, sy vrees, sy eie familielede doodmaak en ook sy eie vrou laat doodmaak. Later sal hy ook mense in Jerusalem laat doodmaak, sodat daar mense op sy begrafnis sal huil. 'N wrede man, vol van sy eie mag. En so ook baie diktators, ook vandag, nog doen om mag te probeer behou. en teenoor dit hierdie baba wat al die mag het. Die punt wat Matteus dus vir ons hier wil maak, ons is mooi daaroor dink, is dat daar alles behalwe vrede is rondom hierdie kind Jesus. En dit is nogal belangrik om dit te onthou dan in hierdie tyd waarin ons nou gaan van Kersfees. Hier is geen Kersfees hier in hierdie verhaal. Geen vrede en Kersvrede waar Jesus gebore word nie. En daarom is hy met sy ouers ook 'n vlugteling baie gou. En Matteus maak seker dan dat ons ten spyte van hierdie donker tyd, van hierdie wrede tyd, sien dat Jesus is die vervulling van die beloftes soos in die skrifte in die Ou Testament opgeteken. En hierdie verlosser, dit is so wonderlik om dit te kan weer verstaan en besef, hierdie verlosser word nie in die gemak en weelde gebore wat die wêreld voorhou nie. Wanneer die wêreld geweld en lyding ervaar, dan is hy Immanuel, God met ons, by ons, waar ons pyn en lyding ervaar en stikkendheid in hierdie wêreld. Matteus wys duidelik dat die Seun van God in die Hosea 11 vers 1, dat hy, Jesus, die Messias is, dat hy eintlik Israel is. Hy is die een in Israel, wat deur al die eeue sal slaag waar Israel gefaal het. En daarom is dit belangrik dat wanneer ons dan hierdie lees, en dan voel het vir ons hierdie vrede gebeure, is amper misplaas in Kers, in hierdie Kersverhaal, maar het is nie. Dit is die werklikheid. Net soos die werklikheid ook in ons lewe, in hierdie wêreld waarin ons lewe is. Van stikkendheid, van geweld, van die bose, en toch, in die midde van dit alles, is hy, ons Here, wat alle mag het in hemel en op aarde. Ons gaan nou eers na musiek luister en daarna gaan ons voort om te dink oor hierdie gedeelte in Matteus en daaroor te mediteer. Bly ingeskakel. Jy is ingeskakel by die ABO-program Krag van die Bybel. Onthou ook dat jy kan inskakel enige tyd deur die week om met 'n ABO-berader te praat, skakel gerus Radio Kaapse Kansel by 021-180-5744. 021-180-5744. Hierdie gesprekke is vertroulik tussen jou en die berader en wees vrymoedig om dan in te skakel en met 'n berader te praat. Ons gesels op die oomblik en mediteer rondom Matteus hoofstuk 2 van vers 13 tot en met vers 16 tot en met vers 23. En ons is besig om te probeer verstaan dat hierdie gedeelte wat hier lê in hierdie Kersverhaal wat Matteus dan hier bring, is so 'n wrede stuk geskiedenis. En tog vind Matteus dit nodig om dit juis hier te plaas, sodat ons, wanneer ons werklik hieroor mediteer en reflekteer, begin verstaan dat hierdie Jesus, hierdie verlosser, word nie in gemak en weelde gebore nie, maar hy word in 'n wêreld waar daar geweld is en lyding gebore. En dan maak Matteus dit duidelik, maar hy is Immanuel, God met ons. by ons waar daar pyn en lyding is. En daarom wanneer ons hierdie lees, dis eintlik so hartseer, mens kry eintlik die pyn in jou eie hart wanneer jy dit lees. In vers 18, 'n stem is in Rama gehoor, 'n droewige gehuil en 'n luide rouklag. Rachel huil oor haar kinders, en sy weier om vertroos te word, omdat hulle nie meer daar is nie. 'N roukleed, 'n rouklag, wat eintlik kom uit Jeremia 3, 31 vers 15. Een verhaal van Godse belofte, dat hy Israel terugbring uit die ballingskap, uit die stikkendheid, en sy verbond weer hernieu met hulle. Al huil en kla hulle, is daar verlossing op pad. En dit is die kern wat Matteus ook vir ons gee hier, as ons daaroor dink en saamgesels daaroor. Jesus bring verlossing, al lyk alles verlore. En is dit dan nie waar in ons eie lewens, dat daar waar daar stikkendheid is in ons lewe en pyn en stryd, daar is hierdie verlossing in Jesus die duidelikste. En al is daar dan hier hartseer dinge aan die gang, maar ons weet dat daar is dinge hier aan die gang tydens Jesus' geboorte. God is besig om in hierdie wêreld van moord en geweld en stikkendheid sy verlossing te laat deurkom, te laat gebeur, konkreet te word deur Jesus. Kom hierdie verlossing vir die wêreld, vir hierdie wêreld waarin jy en ek lewe, waar daar nie altyd die lag en die vreugde is nie. En dit is belangrik vir ons om dit te verstaan. En dit is wat ons hoor wanneer ons hierdie verse lees aan Matteus 2. In ons ellende is dit so helder duidelik, die lewe en die hoop wat Jesus vir ons bring. En van nou af sal ons sien hoe Matteus dwars deur die evangelie skryf hoe God se verlossing in Jesus ontvou. Heel anders wel as wat mense verwag, en is dit nie ook jou en my ervaring nie, dat ons dink dat die verlossing vind op 'n sekere manier plaas en ons wil dit amper bestel, en toch is Godse verlossing heel anders as wat ons verwag. Maar groter, dieper, omvattender en kragtiger as wat ons ooit kon dink. Maar om dit te sien, het ek oë van geloof nodig deur die Gees van die Here. Godse verlossing in Jesus is hier. En Matteus verseker ons daarvan, al lyk alles verlore, is God besig om te werk. En hy hou sy beloftes, juis as die wêreld so stikkend is, om hier die stikkende wêreld heel te maak. Jy moet juis hom sien werk, en dit is wat ons hoor, wat hierdie gedeelte sê oor God. God werk so anders, soos wat Matteus in elke gedeelte so ver wat ons gelees het, eintlik vir ons wys. God werk so verrassend anders. Hy werk juis wanneer dit so verlore lyk rondom ons. Want dan is dit hy alleen wat die verlossing kan bring. Anders gryp ek nog na my eie oplossings, nee, my eie verlossingsplan. As mense net van my meer hou, as ek net meer effectief is hier en meer bereik hier en meer perform daar. O, as ek net nie foute maak nie. Ons het al hierdie dinge. As ek net meer geld het in die einde van die maand. As ek net meer status het, meer mag het. Die dinge kan doen wat ek wil doen. En dis het al hierdie planne. En dan kom die Here so verrassend. Juist daar waar dit lyk of alles verlore is. Kom hy. Want sy genade kan hulle regtig net ervaar word wanneer ons voel daar is niks anders nie wat ek meer het of kan doen nie. Dit is dan wanneer sy krag deurkom. Tensy ons natuurlik ander mense blameer. En dit is maar die menslike manier, nee, om maar ander te blameer rondom my. Ja, dit is omdat jy so is dat ek so optree. Dit is omdat jy so is dat ek in hierdie toestand is. As ons maar net ons eie armheid, arm van gees, wat ons later in Matteus gaan lees in die bergrede, sal wees, dan hoor ons en sê, geseend is jy, wanneer jy arm van gees is. Want jy sal die koninkryk sien. In ons ellende sien ons dan God en Jesus ons verlosser op die duidelikste. Dit is wat hierdie gedeelte wat hier staan van God sê. Wat sê dit van ons? Dit sê dat ons stikkend is. Die mens, die wêreld, jy en ek, ons is allemaal stikkend. Maar ons kan glo en weet dat niks hom kan keer om ons te verander, om die verlossing van jou en my te bring. So, lieve luisteraar, my vraag sal wees uit hierdie gedeelte, is dit wie jy sien God is? Is dit wie jy sien jy is? En kan jy jou hart oopmaak en jou oë oopmaak en hom sien, jou geloofsoë, om te kan sien wie hy is hier in jou en my stikkendheid. Wat ek ook as ek mooi lees hier, dan weet ek ook daar is 'n tyd om te vlug. En daar is 'n tyd om terug te kom. Maar dit, daardie wysheid, vra ons van hom. Ons doen dit nie uit ons vlees nie. Here, ek moet nou hier stil bly. Hier moet ek nou wag. Wag op U. Hier moet ek uitkom en wegkom. Om werklik te gaan kyk na die bome van die veld en die plante en die voëls van die hemel en sorg U vir hulle. Om U koninkryk raak te kan sien. Ja, daar is 'n tyd om te vlug. Tyd om te kyk, in te neem, in stilte en om terug te kom na hom. Want dit kan ons net doen, sy krag. En met geloof in hom wat getrou is. So kyk rondom jou in hierdie kerstyd, met al sy liggies en feestelikheid, ja, en sing en wees bly ook. Maar weet, dit is nie hoe die wêreld lyk nie. Die wêreld is stikkend, maar in hom is daar heelheid en vrede en vreugde. Al druis en raas alles om jou en soms in jou ook. Kom by hom. Ervaar sy liefde en sy rus en weet dat niks jou daaruit kan ruk nie. Selfs nie die dood nie. Want hy het selfs dit oorwin. Hy lewe. En daarom lewe ons ook tot in ewigheid. Dit is so wonderlik om net so te kan sit en en lees wat Matteus vir ons hier sê, en dit ek kan oordink, met stilte in my hart deur die Gees. En het is wonderlik om elke week met jou te kan luister en na pot gooi en te kan gesels oor Matteus. Die volgende week gaan ons verder met hierdie boek. Hierdie boek van boeke, die Bybel, wat die Here vir ons gegee het. Die boeke van die persoon, die Here, onse Here. En daarom kan ons dit glo. Daarom is dit gesagvol. Die belangrikste boek in die hele wêreld. Seën van die Here vir elkeen van julle, waar jy ook al is en wat jy ook al ervaar. Ons gesels dan volgende keer weer saam op hierdie program. Tot ziens.
Hierdie inset was aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.